Ram, just to let you know, I did kick off the recording, so whenever you're ready, we're good to go on that front.
All right. Thanks, Tracy. Okay, I'll start with the obligatory, please be aware of the antitrust policy notice. It's there on the top of our notes page. And let me post a link to the notes page. Doc on Rocket Chat. All right. Stan, now that you're back, maybe we should start with the maybe we'll let's take a quick look at the identity paper. Gordon, did you get a chance to add any of the indie stuff into it yet?
Was that a question for me,
Who is
Gordon?
that? Who is that a question
Yes.
for?
That was a question for Gordon.
No, I didn't add the indie stuff in yet. I don't think. Well, oh, actually, I did. Yes, I did. Yes. Yes.
Let's go there and take a look.
Gordon is wondering about these two identity papers, I think. Which one is he working on now?
The system identities paper, just so, and let me post a link to that on the Rocket Chat.
I think Ram, you should tell Gordon talk about the differences with the regular identity paper, because we had this discussion yesterday, but I think it might help coming from the horse's mouth, so to say.
I think we talked about it in the last architecture work group meeting, right? So we wanted to make this specific to the ledger architecture itself and the system identities functions needed for system identities, and not solve the overall identity use case and the bigger picture on identities, but focus pretty much on system identities and the functions associated with that.
Is
And I
that
think we recommended saying, hey, this is the focus of this paper, and put a reference to the other paper for the broader identity related topics.
and cross-reference from the other back here too. I
Yes.
just wanted you to say that for Gordon's benefit more than anything else.
Okay.
Yes, I think what's confusing is there's material about each of our frameworks in both papers, and it's hard to see the level of detail they're focusing in on. It's not as clear in those sections. Like, I understand the other white paper can talk about sort of issues from regulations and the landscape, the technical and legal landscape, and but then it has a section about sections about each of the frameworks, and it's not as focused in those sections. So that's gonna that's
Can I make a can I talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah, that would be how the user identities are implemented in those frameworks. Basically, okay. That's how okay. That's what we'll talk about in the other paper, not here.
Okay.
So because each one of them have a different way, and the nodes and the user identities can be orthogonal and driven by configuration, really. I mean, that in Fabric, at least, that's what happens, you know. And anyway, so we'll talk about it later in terms of the user identity. Now we focus on this.
So I think, Gordon, the main work that remains to be done is if we can get all the projects description in the same format as our sections, so that we can have a more, you know, functional description along the functional requirements we've laid out in the top section, in the generalized section.
Yep. Yep.
So whether that means just refactoring the material that each of the projects has provided, or whether we need one more iteration with them to get it there. I think we, for example, we had this discussion with Bin when he provided that, and I think we captured some to-do item there. You know, maybe the information is just spread out in the paragraph description, but if we can just make it such that there's, you know, for instance, we talk about how Bootstrap happens, how authentication authorization is done using the MSP, and so forth. Just a couple of lines along each of those. If we can do that, or I think the other suggestion was, can we have, like, just like we did for the consensus paper, can we have like a table and use that to kind of compare along those things? So one of those maybe is the next thing to do. So that it has the uniform look and feel and reflects the functional requirements that we've laid out on top.
Sure. And where that gets beyond my knowledge, I can tap the people that have originally contributed those sections, right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's very clear.
And I think with that, we're pretty much almost done with the paper. If we can wrap that up.
There's some notes right at the end. Appendixes, working group call notes not yet incorporated into the body. And so, for instance, cross-anchoring use cases when you need to validate truth of a third party's assertion. I can't really make much sense out of those or know where they would fit in.
Sorry, which one are you talking about?
Right at the end, the appendix, where it says notes not incorporated into the body of the white paper. Those are kind of things that you obviously discussed, but I can't really figure out where to work those in.
I think the cross-anchoring use cases will all go into the interoperability thing, which is the next work item we're working on. I don't think we need to cover it here.
Okay.
Focus on chain for establishing the attestation. I think the transactors we left out of scope, and that's probably covered in the other paper. Privacy, can you... Lines and decode identifiers on different chains have an ID that can be typed to ZK proof. I think we touch a little bit on privacy, and we just say we don't assume, we assume system identities are not private.
You're right, right, really? Right, right.
Do you think we need to say anything more about privacy in this paper, folks? Any other thoughts, comments?
I think the original point of that was to call out that system identifiers, if they're not private, can't be used for the public ontology side of the transaction processing.
Yeah, And do we have that called out somewhere in the paper? We have a privacy section, section 5.
I don't know. I'll check.
If that's what it means, I could probably work that in.
This may not be the case. I think you have a section 5. We may assume that it's desirable to protect privacy of all systems. You know, this iteration of it assumes that system identities and public keys will remain public. I think that what's there in section 5 is adequate, in my opinion. Anyone else have thoughts?
I guess nobody else has thoughts on that. So.
All right, we'll. I guess you have a question. So what is the alternative or solution in this case? Mick?
Is it early morning in San Francisco, Hart?
Yes, it is.
It's always morning in America.
The caffeine has not seeped into the bloodstream yet.
What?
The caffeine has not seeped into the bloodstream yet, I said.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I think we say that this second entry is really related to the one above, and if the point on privacy is made, I think I agree that it is, then I think this bottom point's also covered.
Great, Nathan, thank you. All right, and then let's go back, check anything else back there that we need to cover. Even if we need to make sure there's no private and paid business IDs, also covered through Section 5. For supply chain, even blinding within on-chain is an issue. POC, 7 different organizations, principal problem. I think the next point probably should be covered in our privacy and confidentiality paper, not here. About transaction confidentiality, so I don't think we need to address that here.
Can you elaborate on what you mean by transaction confidentiality?
I think here the point that's being made is that who's transacting with, in some sense, transaction confidentiality, I think we define in the other work stream. But the two points were, confidentiality about the transaction details and side channel information of who's transacting with whom.
So can I just pop the stack on this section for a second? We're really talking about system identities, not about transactor identities.
That's right? Correct.
So this is really about identities of validators. So it's meta level, not about transactions or transactors or the information that's going between those.
Correct.
So are we spending way too much time on this section? Like, shouldn't it be like one paragraph?
Which section are you talking about?
the privacy section?
Yeah, I think we can make that shorter. It's, 5, that's what you're talking about.
It reminds me of the act as, I mean, who's acting, who's doing the transaction on behalf of whom.
Yeah, but it's not, but we're not, that's not what this paper is supposed to be about. This paper is supposed to be about the identity of the validator, not about the identity of the transactor.
Agreed, and the blockchain itself provides the confidentiality, so.
Or not. That's a separate, the discussion about the confidentiality of the transactors, about who's participating in the transactions, is a separate issue from what we're trying to cover in this paper.
Well, and I think
all I'm saying is that this paper is just...
I think all we were trying to say is that the application of the system identities matters to the other part of the privacy and confidentiality, and then the bulk of the content should be in the other identity paper.
So the third paragraph can be deleted in privacy.
I would just go with the first two paragraphs and dump everything else. In section
all
five.
That is
all of that all is that. About all that's about transactors, not about the system identities. The only thing
maybe we can,
identity is the first two paragraphs.
Yeah, maybe we can condense the everything after that to just say care should be is taken to design the system such that transactor confidentiality is not compromised by the way system identities are used for user transactions.
Yes, sure. I like the wrong phrase then.
I like that well. I like that very well. So,
should I try to? Was it a record if someone captures that? Like repeat that?
Should I?
Tracy, the recordings get automatically, converted to text, right?
I thought not, that's where these papers come
anymore.
From.
Whatever Ron just said, we want back.
Well, let's see. Right, this is at 20 past the hour. We'll have to remember to go back and look at that.
I got take care when you die not to obscure the transactor IDs. Was that it?
Not obscure.
Against such that privacy of transactor IDs. That the system is designed to maintain privacy of transactor IDs.
Okay.
When system identities are public. As I captured, I'm not sure that's exactly what I said, but.
I think that's clear.
I think that's all we need to say there.
And then all the rest of this goes?
I think that can be wordsmith, but Carl, we leave that to you.
Even the two paragraphs before that statement could go away.
Yeah, because they're talking about transactors, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, what if I mark those strike out for now? And you said these two, right, Mick?
The first two paragraphs in that section are the only ones that are really about system identities.
Hey, maybe it makes sense to salvage like one sentence out of that third paragraph. to just explicitly say that the transactor privacy is out of scope.
Agree with Stan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe reference the other paper.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Good. Good.
Well, Vipin, are you sharing something on screen on Zoom?
Nothing's being shared on Zoom. We're working in the Google Doc. Let me post the link to that.
By the way, the links are also posted on Rocket Chat.
Yeah, I'd recommend grabbing stuff out of Rocket Chat.
Mashmi, by the way, welcome to the group. We can say a couple of words to introduce yourself.
Thanks for inviting me to this group. I know I've not been very regular. We've been busy with work. I'll try to attend more often. I'm really interested in this space. I'll try to attend.
Welcome.
Mashmi, this is the architecture working group, and we are talking about system identity paper, but we talk about several other subjects. In fact, we may start talking about the interoperability paper right now. So the identity working group is on alternate Wednesdays. That means the next Wednesday we'll have it, even though we are having a global summit.
Okay. I'm interested in understanding the system identities as well. So this is useful.
And go to chat. I don't know if you've seen the Rocket Chat channel. Are you on Rocket Chat as well, Moshe?
Yes, I'm on Rocket Chat.
Okay, great. There is an architecture work group channel, and there that's what we typically use because the chat on Zoom is not persistent and available only to those on the call. So you do that. So the links are there in the Rocket Chat. Are any other thoughts, comments on the system identities paper? Are we good today? Shall we switch to the other topic? Nathan, are you satisfied with the, can you take a look at the INDI paper and help kind of, INDI section and help kind of work with Gautam to kind of reformulate it so that it's aligned to the sections we have on top?
Okay. Yeah, I already started poking at it, so I'll look at the other sections and see what I can do to make it match.
Is she done with it? Can we get it tomorrow?
Great. So, because I think what we wanted to do was to get it such that it's following the same functional breakup, right? So if we get there, that'll be fantastic. And if we can do that for all the projects, then it becomes more aligned. So we, you know, someone reading the paper can then see, okay, this is the ideal abstract requirement, and this is how each of the projects is actually fulfilling those requirements. And you know, if there are differences, then they can see the differences between them. Any other thoughts on the paper? Can we move to interop?
Sure, that's good for me.
All right. Stan, we want to go to...
Yeah, let's do that. Though I haven't made a whole lot of progress. I don't know if you guys discussed this paper the last meeting.
I think we pretty much spent most of our time on the identity paper, so we didn't quite get to it.
All right. So I guess the last communication we had on the topic was Vipin's email to the group. So I think it makes sense to kind of maybe hash that out a little bit. So as far as the paper itself, I think I'll edit it a little bit to collapse, because right now those use cases are reiterated twice, and then the plan is to kind of dissect them again. So I think I'll collapse the kind of the use cases section with short descriptions with the following subsections. So just though these use cases are described in a single spot, just for brevity's sake. And so as far as the asset transfer use case, I think both Ben and Vipin brought up the question of the protocol, the actual details of how this is done in reference specifically to the sequence diagram. And so the last discussion we had of this was that this was the right level of depth. And it was very interesting. I actually haven't read that before, the proof of burn article. That was very curious. To me, that felt it more of a mechanism of how to implement the proof of destruction. And also, it included the flow for how to kind of bootstrap a network with assets from a different network. So we could probably come up with a different flow for the asset transfer out of that approach. But that, again, just would be a different way of doing it that not necessarily would give us different or more primitives to work with.
But the thrust of my email was proof of burn is a very... which I've expressed before, it's a very limited use case. Okay, first, because the way in which the assets, burning the asset on one chain makes sense is in the context of all the holders of that asset. So it is a general, something that, you know, like it's like a share buyback, let's say, which increases the value of everybody's holdings on that chain. So as far as one person, you know, one counterparty transferring an asset from one chain to another, it has limited viability. That's all I was saying. I'm not saying proof of burn is not a, you know, is not something that cannot be done, or that it has uses. It has no uses. All I'm saying is the uses that it's normally used for. I mean, I list those things. It has nothing to do with the how of it. It's more about, you know, what is it normally being used for. So that's what.
Okay, but so I think we've been trying to say that these use case, we're talking about these use cases agnostic of the, say, economic implications, right? This is more of a tool to come up with the interoperability primitives, almost similar to what we've been doing with privacy and confidentiality paper, right? We pick a use case and then look at all the aspects, you know, kind of through the lens of that. So here we kind of, I think, agree that there are these five kind of a meta use cases with asset transfer, balance transfer, with swaps, and, you know, identity interoperability, cross-chain anchoring. I'm sure there are more, but these feel like they'll cover most of the interoperability practical interoperability use cases, right? Because just talking about interoperability as a general term is a very empty conversation, right? It should always be looked at in terms of some context. So here we're setting the context.
Yeah, but if there's an alternate way to satisfy that use case without using that, we should discuss it. But ultimately, what we're trying to see is, let's take those use cases, see how we can actually implement them with some, and look at the functional requirements and the primitive functions that would be needed to satisfy those interoperability use cases.
Right.
Yeah, but to choose proof of burn as the way to interoperate between chains, to buy an asset from one chain from an asset that you have on another chain.
So that's a different use case. I think this is just transferring an asset from one to another.
Right, this is not exchange, right? This is just the one-way transfer. I mean, proof of burn. But
didn't you put up a...
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I get the point, but I feel like, you know, the economic sense has to be taken into account, because otherwise, how can you ever see this as a practical use case? These are, things that were done during ICO issuance to ensure, you know, that, I mean, it's basically a gimmick, according to me. But hey, especially since it really does not accrue direct economic value to the guy who's doing the transfer. It is a putative. Gain, right? Only if I hold 100,000 tokens, and if I burn 90,000 of those tokens, yes, I'm still holding 10,000, so it holds value for me.
So can we go up one level and just talk about the use case and see whether there's an alternative without that, and then maybe we can see whether we can simplify it further. I mean, the use case is we have an asset on one chain and we want to move it to another chain. So now how do we do that so that there's no, once you transfer the asset to the other chain, it can no longer live on the other chain, on the first chain. So let's say it's a transfer from the source chain to a target chain. Once the asset has been moved to the target chain, it should no longer exist on the source. So how do you...
Or at least no longer be spendable on the source. Or
spendable,
no longer,
yes.
You know, there's certain operations that you can't do once it's moved, as a general principle. And again, just to be clear, Vipin, are you reacting to the concept of burn, or are you simply reacting to the higher level concept of value transfer? I'm trying,
because value is having not a hard transferred. Time. I'm sorry to say, value is not being transferred. Normally,
we do this all the time with currency exchanges. I mean, I can walk in and I can give dollars and get back euro. And
the dollars that the bank takes from you is not burned.
From my perspective, it is.
Sure.
Sorry, so maybe burned is not the right word.
The money supply doesn't diminish. In other words, you know, you're walking into a bank with $100,000 and exchanging it for euro does not diminish, even if you walk in with $1 trillion and do it.
But
the money
saying.
Supply of the USD is not diminished. There's no asset In other words, for you, there is an asset appearing on the other chain, but the problem is normally this is done when ICOs are issued, right, by guys who
wanted. It's done often. Right? I mean, there are many times when it's done. And this is, so again, I'm trying to pop the stack and get us out of here. That there are many techniques to put an asset in some form of escrow, right? Burning the asset, which is really transferring the value to an address which is unspendable. So if I burn a Bitcoin, I don't.
Yeah, I know exactly how burning happens. You don't have to explain that.
But stop. Let me finish, please. So there are many techniques to put this escrow in a state where I can no longer spend it, which allows it to be transferred.
But it's not an escrow. That is what I'm trying to say. You cannot recover it. Escrow means it is held until some action takes place, and that then the funds are released. You cannot use the word escrow there. All right? This is a destruction.
So that we need... Okay. I'm having a hard time understanding what you're really reacting to in this discussion, because clearly we have examples of doing this, right? Clearly we have examples of taking an asset that is represented in one cryptocurrency and transferring the value.
Okay. Show me
to others.
Show me where you could do this between existing running cryptos. Like, for example, how can you transfer 10 Bitcoin to Ethereum Ether with this technique?
I wouldn't try to.
Exactly, because it's an edge case used in some ridiculous situations like ICOs, which have nothing to do with the real world.
But where I'm going to use this is things like I'm going to do it with T-Chain or Lightning Networks or other things like that, where I'm going to take something on the main chain and I'm going to give up and I'm going to relinquish control of this. So that
Lightning Networks have true escrow. It is not done by burning. Fine.
Right. So are you reacting to the burning? Are you reacting to the ability to put something in a state that I can no longer manage it?
Then I can no longer manage it. It's different from nobody can access.
Nobody is claiming that burning is the only way to do this. It is one way to do this that some have found useful. But what we need to be able to do, the primitive that we need, is to be able to take some asset and restrict the set of operations that could be performed on it in a provable, and I mean non-interactive proof, way, so that asset or so that the transfer of value can be recognized either permanently or temporarily in some other context.
Mick, can you write that up?
And burning is just one possible way of doing this.
I don't know. You know, there's a confusion here between escrowing, which is Lightning. I agree completely with that. The asset doesn't disappear. It moves beyond your control. That is for sure. Because you're taking that asset, somebody else you're paying somebody else through intermediaries or whatever it is.
So,
but in the end, burning and escrowing are fundamentally different, because
burning is just escrowing to somebody that never gives it back.
Oh, please.
right?
Anyway.
I mean, okay, If we're reacting to the words, then pop the stack.
No, it's not the words. It's a concept, right? Escrow is a concept which is very much, you have certain conditions attached to an escrow. And if those conditions are not met, you get the money back. That is escrow. I'm taking my cash and I'm burning it. And it's going up a smoke, and the people around me are going to give me something else, like Swiss francs, because they hold US dollars and they know that because I burned the US dollars, the value of their dollars is going up. It's not happening.
So maybe we should caught up on the terminology of burn or destroy and talk about functionally what is needed, right?
Yeah, can we? I agree with Ram here. Like, I think the burn people is. I think the use of the word burn is not needed here. And if we can just describe what we wanted a higher functional level, like the way Mick, you just put it, right? You just said the way you nicely defined escrow to be very broad. You know, you put something. You give something, you know, restricted, transactional, I forget the word you used, but it was nice. So I think if we, if the word burn is problematic, let's just take it out and define things more generally.
Right, I completely agree with that. Let's get rid of the word burn. It may be one technique for doing this. I think the high-level operation that we're going for here is that we have to do something in one chain that restricts access and generate a proof of that restricted access.
Yes. But if you can say it like that, that's much clearer.
And the techniques for doing that are very broad. And each ledger is going to be able to find a way to do that.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, we want to have define certain primitives. We recommend each of the ledgers implement to allow interoperability between them, right? So, you know, if there are multiple wave such primitives, then we choose and then, you know, enumerate those, right?
I don't think it's going to be possible for us to enumerate all possible primitives.
Well, let's pick the most common ones and lay them out, right?
Okay, well, let's do pick some common ones then.
I have a question, I guess, for Mick's definition and I guess a question for the group is that this beautiful definition about, you know, putting the asset into a restricted functionality mode. Do you consider this proof of destruction, I'm not going to say burn, but as a one of the sub cases of that, where we're putting it into a restricted functionality set where nothing is permitted? So then we're kind of down a primitive, or proof of destruction is a more specific, easier to prove primitive of its own.
If you're asking me the question, I think, and I think this goes back to where I've said before, I think there's some notion of being able to prove the state of an asset, external, non-interactive, external to the ledger, right? And among the states that we might want to prove that an asset is currently in is proof that it's unable to be spent.
So
at any point, maybe we should, perpetual proof.
That
Okay.
So maybe what we need is to maybe clarify a little bit. Clarify the use case itself a little bit, right? So when we say asset transfer, we mean that we have an asset in one chain. Are we talking about transferring that asset? So you can just say, I'm going to transfer that asset from one user to another user, and simultaneously we're transferring that asset from quote unquote one chain to another chain? Or are we saying, so I guess the destruction part comes in when the users are, so what does it mean, right? I'm just trying to see, there's two things happening, right? You're transferring between the asset from one user to another user, and you could have done that within one chain, and that we know very simply how to do. Now, I guess the use case is that the users are somehow in two different chains, right?
Well, I think the way we've describe this particular use case, and especially with the sequence diagram I proposed, is that it's the same user, so it's the same owner.
Okay.
Because if we also want to add owner transfer, then we're gonna have to involve a whole lot more of the identity.
Correct. That ties in with the identity paper. You're right. So it's that's pretty clear. So you're saying it's the same user. He's just transferring an asset, and let's call it an asset from one chain to another chain.
Right. And I think, again, this is going to be a lot easier to reason about if we don't think of these assets as crypto,
okay, so,
but a
so
generic non-fungible asset.
So this is a non-fungible asset. So this is a digital representation of, let's say, a car. And you're holding the title of the car in one chain, and now you want to hold the title of the car in a different chain, and you don't want, like, once you transfer it, you don't want a representation in the other chain left over. That,
right.
So, revisiting that whole subject again, that means the second chain has an issuance mechanism that is sensitive to the other chain, right?
Correct.
Obviously, you cannot have this unless the second chain is aware of the first chain.
Yes, that's precisely what we're talking about, right? So when we do a transfer.
Aware to the extent
not
that it can
quite,
verify.
Yeah.
Aware to the extent that it can verify that non-interactive proof. I mean, there has to be some.
Not only can it verify the non-interactive proof, but the rules of issuance in the second chain
match
are going to say that if this proof is verified, then we can issue assets on this chain.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, we have agreed on something.
There has to be some. We agree on more than you think.
No. We agree on a lot of things. The point that I'm trying to make is this is a cop-out to do this. Because if you really want to talk about asset transfer, you got to say something like this, which is you got a user on chain A who decides to transfer his asset to chain B. So you got to find another user who has assets on chain B and is interested in getting assets on chain A, and then
that's a different,
you know,
that is
the only way of transferring assets reasonably. The other stuff is all based on the rules of the chain, and normally only during this ICO craze has this stuff come to mean anything, and it probably will die away soon. It won't be for running chains with assets in them. This may not be, possible. I don't know.
Not sure I understand, Vipin. The second use case is the exchange use case, and we have that listed as one of the use cases we're going to get to. Are you saying the asset transfer use case is not useful in and of itself? I would think it is, right?
Yeah, but the asset transfer in this case assumes, like, for example, I just said, how are you going to transfer from Bitcoin to Ethereum using this? Very simple. There are running chains. And are you saying that that this implies for this particular thing to happen, the issuance criteria on Ethereum will say, oh, show me the proof that you burned Bitcoin and I will give you Ethereum. There will be some, sort of exchange rate, let's say. And the other way, this is not going to happen, right? Because those rules in those chains will never change in terms of the burn. And the only way they have implemented this is by using, intermediaries, escrow mechanisms on both chains and DVP and all those things. These are the reality of the situation. If you want to, if you want to talk about something that is purely abstract and theoretical, go ahead.
No, I think we absolutely have the DBP use case coming up, but that's not the one we started with, right? This is saying I have a title for an asset on one chain. I want to move it to a different chain.
Right. We do have the atomic swap use case. Right.
Okay. Here's it again. This is not a use case that you're discussing right now. Not a real use case. Okay.
I'm sorry. Are you saying that having digital assets on a chain, which are not like tangible assets, and moving them from one chain to another chain is not a valid use case?
I didn't say that.
Okay.
I didn't say that. All I'm saying is that happening through a burn, is what I'm talking about.
Sure. So if there's an alternative without the burn, and I guess the burn is, we shouldn't get caught up on the burn. If there's an alternative, we forget the actual burning mechanism. If there's an alternative way of doing the asset transfer use, let's talk about the asset transfer use case. And if there's an alternative without having some kind of proof of that asset, digital representation of that asset no longer existing in the previous chain, if there's an alternative to that, then let's talk about it. Right? So I think we're all on the same page that we do want to have an asset transfer use case. The question is, are there alternates to what, or are there improvements to what the mechanism that Stan has put up so far, right? Does that make sense?
I think Stan said that the asset transfer is from the same user to another chain that the user wants to put something on, right? That's not a person to person. It's a sort of me to me transfer.
Yeah.
Right. And this was so that we can add the, and this is one of the assumptions. I mean, last time we had the conversation, Mick pointed out that we should have a long list of assumptions associated with this particular flow.
Okay.
And we started enumerating those so that we can simplify the scenario and we don't have to deal with different users. We kind of said it's the same user. There's still the assumption that they're able to prove to the destination ledger that they are the owner of the asset on the source ledger. And again, we didn't get into details. For now, it's just one of the assumptions.
Okay, so it doesn't take a separate use case to transfer an asset to somebody else.
Well, in a way, you don't have to. This is where potentially you have the Bitcoin versus Ethereum, right? Kind of a shapeshift scenario or a ripple where you have liquidity providers and there are atomic swaps happening on ledgers. On two ledgers, transferring assets to another user, right? So this is a kind of a semantically simpler, but I guess more an attempt at a real world scenario where we just transfer something from one ledger to another. I don't know. Completely contrived use case. I was thinking like a registration, transferring registration from one state to another, assuming each state is running its own blockchain. Right.
Okay.
I mean, this is, I really think we should try to keep this agnostic of the crypto, especially given that Hyperledger projects are not really not cryptocurrency systems. Right? And if we say talk about something like Fabric, it becomes even more interesting. Like, how do you prove these things? So the level of detail we've been trying to keep is, again, high.
And an atomic swap would be exchanging, like buying a crypto or exchanging cryptos?
It's exchanging assets between two ledgers. Basically, the way we categorize the use cases, we have two types of transfers, which is asset transfer and balance transfer. And then atomic swap would be two, or as somebody pointed out, potentially more of these transactions going in opposite directions, but happening atomically.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I buy your argument, Stan, that, you know, I was also thinking about the whole registration thing before you mentioned it, because that, so I buy that as a possible transfer from self to self across chains. So I guess I'm convinced now. So that's a good thing. Thank you.
All right. Welcome, and I guess good thing we had this discussion. Can put that down as a contrived but understandable example of where this makes sense. All right, and I think we're coming up on time. Let's see. So, do we want to stick to this? I mean, I think, Vipin, if you have other ideas for how the asset transfer flow would work, I think it would be great if we have other alternatives. Again, if we can come up with more.
Look, a registry, right, which is the use case you're talking about.
Sure.
Only works insofar as those registries are visible across everything, meaning like you can either detect a duplicate, like in the Monadigo case, right? That means like I've got an invoice and I've already borrowed money from someplace. So there's some kind of a registry happening. So in this case, the registry allows, the rules of the registry in the car case allows the asset to be transferred and only exists once in all of the different ledgers that exist.
Correct.
Because we have 50 states. We have 50 states or whatever number of states. Or you move the car to Germany, whatever, you know. So the visibility of this matters. And I don't know how it works today, whether you can, without notifying, let's say if I go from New York to California, I register the car in California. Do I have to tell the New York guys that I've no longer registered? It basically just falls off because I don't pay my registry dues or whatever. So in a sense, it's like burning, I guess. So yeah, I buy that argument that, you know. And I apologize if I wasted all our time for 1 hour debating this.
No worries, Ruben. You know, we just need to get on the same page. So I think we're at time though. So I doubt if we will, if people have a couple of minutes, I'm going to be out the next, the 2 weeks out from now. If you guys are, if enough of you guys are available, then you can meet and maybe you can continue the discussion on this. But I'm not going to be able to join on 19th.
I'll be here.
rest of you folks, if you're there, maybe you can continue on and have the call. They not quorum on 19th.
We'll see who shows up.
Okay. All right.
I'll be around on the 19th as well.
So. Okay, then I think you have quorum. So, Stan, perhaps you can lead that and make progress with the paper.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, folks. Good discussion. I'm glad we converged at the end.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.